Sophie Maslow's home, and I'm Howard Braun, and several rise for the National Council of Jewish Women, and we're going to talk to our ex-mayor with some further questions beyond that which we had before. Say a word, will you?
Yes, thank you. I'm glad to see you.
Thank you. I've been interviewing many people around Pittsburgh, and in talking to businessmen, they often make the remark that Pittsburgh has been relatively a clean city as compared to many major cities in America, politically clean, I meant. And is there any reason you can see for that?
No, except the character of the people who have been in charge in the city of Pittsburgh, Mayor Flaherty, and of course Mayor Calangiri, right before me, and myself. I think we've tried to run an honest administration. I don't know that there's any reason for it except the character of the people who held the city.
That's certainly true, the character of the people, but then Chicago or Newark or New York or, you know, I could go on, hasn't been the case. Why Pittsburgh?
Well, because I think the leaders kept the firm right on politics and on business and things of that sort. In my own administration, I insisted that the contracts that left be strictly done according to law, legally, so that there was no question of any kickbacks or anything improper. So it does begin with the people who are at the top.
You know, I'm not convinced that you and the others were even aware of this difference.
Well, no, except I think this was a trait in our character. This was how we lived. This is our mode of operation and our basic instincts. It wasn't mine that everything be done strictly according to law, strictly legal, and that nothing even perceived to be wrong would come forth. So that I think maybe it begins with the character of the people at the top.
There's no doubt about that, but I'm going to drop that then. This has been a democratic city for a long time, and particularly in democratic cities, this characteristic I talked to you about was not prevalent. But you made a remark which said something about perhaps the better operation of what in crude terms is called the spoils system. When parties were stronger, I think that's the way you put it, when parties were stronger they were more effective. And one of the ways they did it was the spoils system. And yet we had one party. And when the party was stronger, perhaps it was more operative, better functioning.
I agree. I think that maybe the old system, with all of its faults, of the spoils system, had a lot to say for it. Mm-hmm. Because, again, I repeat that the people at the head of the party system were honorable, honest people who really had the welfare of the people at heart. Because as has been said many, many times, that good politics are good government. And I know from my own experience that when Governor Lawrence was chairman of the party in Allegheny County, and when he was the mayor of the city of Pittsburgh and subsequently the governor, he always made it a point to sponsor it. When each ticket was drawn for office, he always made it a point to include an Afro-American, a Protestant, a Catholic, a Jew, and from all parts of the city when he was mayor, so that it turned out to be an effective system. And a strong party is always very, very effective, I believe. You don't have people running off in all directions, pursuing their own interests, so that sometimes there's a lot to be said for a strong party.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to turn toward some of the larger city issues. You speculated very hard, as hard as you could about the basic American degeneration in terms of crime and youth and unwanted pregnancies, and you couldn't see anything.
Well,
I wasn't going to let you get away with that. I want you to speculate some more.
My problem was with crime, with child pregnancies, was that I couldn't find a solution. Every foundation that had grants to offer, and every government that had money to give to the cause, my administration took advantage of it. And I would say that over the 6 years that I was mayor, we literally spent millions on programs. Somehow they weren't effective, and that distressed me. Now, I don't know what the solution is. I still to this day think about it. What's the solution? What can we do? Our police told me such horrifying stories about young people who have the attitude today that, I'm not going to live to be 25, so I can do anything I want, and I don't care what you do to me. Well, how do you deal with a situation like that? I think everybody agrees, and it's not a profound observation, that the problems, of course, begin in the home. If parents cared about their children, if they stayed with them, you have these one-parent households. These are social problems that create the criminal problems.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you deal with social problems? What do you do about them? We have second, third, fourth generations of kids who were raised in poverty and on relief. And they think this is a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
How can you change that? How do you instill a sense of obligation? In my experience, so many households were ruled even by grandmothers who were old, who weren't able to cope with these kids, who were not able to instill anything in them. I don't know what the answer is, and I don't know how to solve it. It did cause me much distress,
mm-hmm.
because it seemed to me that this was the underlying rule, because, as I said, we had programs and we had training programs and entertainment programs, recreation programs.
A lot of the funding came from the federal government under various entitlements.
Right.
And the city had relatively little of its own money.
Right.
Now, could it be
add to that foundations. The Andy Casey Foundation gave us literally millions. Many foundations, the Heinz Foundation, came up with programs that they funded, and that they put people in jobs to do the job, to head their programs with our cooperation. The money was spent, the programs ended, and I saw no results. And I don't know. I don't blame the foundations. They tried, and we cooperated, and we tried, too. We thought everything was worth a try.
Yeah.
Let me interject one thing in this new crime bill. There's a part that says that he wants to start
basketball tennis, 5 o'clock
at night.
That's already been in effect in Pittsburgh. We've had that for a year or two, at least before I left. We had a program at the Y in Homewood where the kids played ball all night.
Mm-hmm.
And it took them off the streets the worst possible hours when they were out. And it did help in Pittsburgh because they were off the streets, and then they went home in the morning and maybe slept all day or whatever they did all day. But it took them off the street for those hours.
And now, gave them a little self.
They liked that. Of course, the trouble with that is that the parents didn't care where their kids were all night. But it was something that we tried. I mean, somebody came up with the idea, funded it, and so we tried it, and it turned out to be pretty good. Now, a lot of people are objecting to it in the president's crime bill, and maybe the cost is prohibitive.
I have a different argument. Any money you spend was a very hard dollar.
Extremely
hard. Okay. When the money flows from Washington, those people don't seem to think it's a hard dollar. When you receive it, you don't think it's a hard dollar. You don't manage it, supervise it, contest it with all the other spending options as carefully as your own, really tough decisions. Could that be part of the problem of the ineffectiveness of what I would call national programs.
I don't agree with you. In a city like Pittsburgh, that has always been close-knit community, shall I say, a city of neighborhoods where everybody knew what was going on in every neighborhood, I believe it was a tough call. And I believe it was a hard dollar, and we considered it a hard dollar, and we tried to spend it as a hard dollar. The results, as they turned out, were not what we would have liked, or were non-existent. The fact is, we worked with every single dollar. Mm-hmm. We used federal money to set up neighborhood police stations, small neighborhoods, so that if they had a problem, they could go to a storefront.
The Japanese model.
Yes, they could go to a storefront. We did that all over the city in 67 neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. We added more police. It hasn't been effective, but we tried, and we went after every dollar. We monitored every dollar that was spent.
I don't think it's any different with the federal government either. They haven't come up with anything that's helping.
Yeah. Of course, that was my question. That was it true that because it was flowing. See, it has to flow through from the federal government to somebody who actually puts it in practice.
Well, we always had the opinion, and it wasn't just my administration, that there wasn't enough money coming from the federal government, that we could do more with more money.
Yes. Because
yes, we always thought that we were shortchanged, particularly under the Republican administrations.
Mm-hmm.
We always felt that we should have had more money for programs, for street fixings, for all kinds of programs. So that we considered it a hard dollar, we treated it as such. The fact that it wasn't always effective was not because we didn't try or that we frittered the money away. We really tried.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm convinced of that, but I felt I had to ask you that question.
Oh, I'm glad you did. Sure, I always wanted to make that clear.
I know you worked real hard on what I would call real estate in the central city. That is, you tried to promote what you could.
Well, you see, unfortunately, we tried every way to sell. You see, we only had a limited budget as to blight, as to how many properties we could tear down, demolish, that were eyesores in neighborhoods. There's still probably thousands that need to come down.
Mm-hmm.
We did the best we could with a limited budget. We tried selling property because the city didn't want to be in the real estate business ever.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, people don't realize that. By the time a house is sold at sheriff's sale, the people who lived in it for years and years and years knew that they were going to be sheriff's sale, didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
So that they just neglected them, and then nobody wanted to buy them. Because if the houses were decent in the first place, the people who had them would have sold them at a profit or for whatever. So that whatever was left behind was total neglect. Excuse me.
The issue of decadent properties.
During my administration, we had sales. We would have taken the dollar for any piece of property that anybody wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wanted some of this property, and as a result, they're still there. They're an eyesore. They're shoot-up galleries. Where we can, within our budget, every year we scheduled so many houses to come down.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it was not enough, but we were limited budgetarily. Mm-hmm. But we did as many as we could. We put houses up for sale. We offered everything we could. Nobody wanted them. If they were good in the first place, the people wouldn't have left them behind. I mean, it's a matter of being practical. Mm-hmm. But we did everything we could.
Yeah, any place that had any value at all
would have never been sold.
Would never have gone.
And the same thing goes for this big business now about the tickets that they're trying to collect. Every year, we went after people who owe tickets.
Yeah.
Problem was, we couldn't track them down. People were gone. And it wasn't dollar-wise to spend a lot of money trying to track down a $50 ticket.
No. Mm-hmm.
So that we did the best we could under it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether they're going to be more successful than we were, we didn't neglect anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to point out, too, you know, physically, when I was at the city, we had a program for street cleaning. But we met such resistance from people if they had to move their cars,
mm-hmm.
or if they didn't move it and were ticketed. They wanted their streets cleaned, but they didn't want to move their cars. They wanted everything done to suit them, you know.
Yeah.
So that there were such problems with trying to do these things. When I took office, the first day I rode into town, I was appalled at the litter on
yeah.
the streets.
Yeah.
And so the first week that I was there, I bought 5 street sweepers.
Mm.
We proceeded to sweep the streets. Unfortunately, Pittsburgh people are litterers and jaywalkers.
Yeah.
Those two things, no matter what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried downtown in the morning between, say, 6 and 9. People would wait for buses, and they'd go in and get coffee, and then they would drop the wrappings
mm-hmm.
and cups and things on the sidewalk. So we, our trucks would make those runs sometimes 2 or 3 times between 6 and 9 o'clock. And by 9 o'clock, you'd have never known they touched it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that?
You know, it's interesting. We were in the South Side the other day. And the people there are so neat.
Yes.
You don't see one thing
no.
on the sidewalk or the street.
That's our model. That's absolutely true. Because it becomes a matter of civic pride.
Not sure there is a littering law.
Of course there's a littering law. But are we serving our people by having police run after litterers
yeah.
or after
yeah.
murderers
yeah.
or rapists
yeah.
and things
yeah.
as a matter
yeah.
of priority?
Yeah.
We still go back to the business of civic pride.
Mm.
And the South Side's a model. People
mm.
there care. How you instill that in other neighborhoods is another problem.
Mm. Yeah. You know, some cities have done more poorly than Pittsburgh. I can name a few in certain respects. I'm thinking of it in terms of job retention and office development retention. L.A. is an example. New York hasn't done so well, I don't think. But places like Cleveland and, in fact, Baltimore, and I don't know others, have been somewhat more successful in revitalization.
Right.
I think Columbus is a wonderful example. I've seen that. Can you speculate on the differences between the so-called successful places and less? And remember, we had a terrific designation as a very desirable place to live.
You see, the difference between us and those other cities is that we have not been recognized for some of the things that we've done. It's been said that Pittsburgh has been the best kept secret. Now, you see, we suffered a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous setback when the mills left. We were in a terrible shape.
And mm-hmm.
the mills, still
yeah.
mills. Nobody has given us credit for what we've done since then.
Mm-hmm.
We've become the transplant center of the world. We're building a huge Union Switch and Signal Center
yeah.
on
yeah.
Second Avenue.
Yeah.
We built Crawford Roberts Development, the first 500 units were sold within a couple of months.
Mm.
That's the first big development in the city of Pittsburgh. We developed Harris Island that was nothing but a dump.
Mm-hmm.
It had been a rendering plant and
yeah.
you couldn't go within 20 miles of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful place now. You have to crawl before you can walk. And we started, we did a lot of them. We did Harris Island, as I said, it's now Washington Landing. We built the Center Crawford that was a blight. Blocks and blocks,
mm-hmm.
and I was born there, so I knew. We put it back on the tax rolls. It's a beautiful development now, and people live there and are paying taxes. We rehabbed hundreds of houses all over the city, which is a matter of record. We really did a lot of things that people don't give us credit for, and there's a lot more to be done. I believe we made a good start on revitalizing ourselves from the last of the mills that were a great economic factor in the city of Pittsburgh.
Well, there's no question that the size of that blow
sure.
was out of proportion to really many other cities achieving mm-hmm. this sudden blow.
You know, there's a lot to be said for developing our riverfronts.
Yeah.
Problem is, the city can't do it, and we can't get developers.
Yeah.
their money, the money markets, the banks aren't lending money. You see, all these things are things that we tried to do and couldn't do. We would have liked to have developed riverfront, apartments, condos, things of that sort. They're just, the banks weren't lending money. We had no developers.
Look, isn't it very clear that when you have jobs and inflow of population, things prosper?
Right.
When there are no jobs and no inflow of population, then banks don't lend money.
Exactly right. And the banks were not lending money because they didn't consider it a good risk.
That's right.
And that's a fact of life. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you make it a good risk? That's the thing.
Well,
but how do you, when you have an aging population, you have a declining school enrollment, that goes back to busing. I think I told you this before. That was one of the problems why a lot of young people didn't want to live in Pittsburgh, because they didn't want their kids bused.
Well, you got it right, except it's backwards. Why aren't there more good, for example, why didn't the insurance industry come flocking into Pittsburgh 5 and 10 years ago, when it was such a great place? It still is. I just picked that one place. Why didn't the advertising business come flocking
in? High corporation taxes in Pennsylvania.
That's one thing. And then, as I said before, a lot of, you know, Pittsburgh is the most affordable city. And any time I went anywhere where a corporation was considering it, I pointed out to them, you could buy a house in Pittsburgh, far cheaper than you could anywhere else in the country, practically. And they admitted that, but yet they wanted to go to the suburbs where they didn't have a busing problem. A lot of people were used to that.
The busing problem.
And that was a problem, and it was, of course, you know, it became a racial thing, but it also is a fact of life.
Yeah, well, that busing, Pittsburgh has a geography which exacerbates the busing problem.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And a neighborhood problem,
and neighborhood.
Centralized, sure, neighborhood.
Speaking of neighborhoods, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask. We've been talking about Pittsburgh as a whole. I'd like you to think about neighborhood by neighborhood for a few minutes.
Sure.
And say what you want to about them. And you obviously can't cover them all.
Yeah. We, of course, have neighborhoods. We have some that are terrific. We have others that need a lot of work. There's no question about it. You mentioned the South Side. People want to live on the South Side. I know somebody just bought a house for $150,000 on the South Side.
Mm-hmm.
People are buying those houses, and it always was a good neighborhood, and it still is. You talk about Squirrel Hill, which always was a good neighborhood, probably will be for many times. Now, what to do about neighborhoods like the Hill District and like Homewood? We work with them as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't know what the solution is.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have some great neighborhoods in the city. We have many. We have Polish Hill, that I think is magnificent. You've got the South Hills, the 19th Ward, which is Brookline and Beachview, which are very nice neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
We have a majority of good neighborhoods where the people there take pride in their homes, but we have others that are not.
Mm-hmm.
I could go neighborhood by neighborhood with you and point out what's good and what's bad in each of them.
What's the one along the river?
Elliott, Sheridan?
No, Beechwood. The one near the ex Sears Roebuck warehouse.
East Liberty.
No, that's not Lee. No, not the. Not
you
the.
Mean,
the
store. West, not the store.
I'm thinking of the warehouse.
Oh, the warehouse. That's Lawrenceville.
Lawrenceville, yes. Can you say something about Lawrenceville?
Lawrenceville is, I believe, progressing beautifully.
Oh.
They have. They've been given. They have used their riverfront.
Mm-hmm.
The riverfront in Lawrenceville. And Lawrenceville is a very progressive neighborhood, and it is really moving along.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Pride, the bakery in Lawrenceville. That's a magnificent structure, and I hope that they will find some other use for it now that the bakery is out of there. But they're doing great things in Lawrenceville.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many factories that have moved in there. A candy factory opened there during my administration, whatever that. And hired a lot of people. And so the Lawrenceville is really doing very well. It's one of the neighborhoods that is coming alive.
Mm-hmm.
That is job-wise.
Yes, well, that's all. I really think that's the key to everything.
Well, of course, jobs are the key to everything.
Are the key to everything.
And in order to get to have jobs, you've got to have people live here.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you, as I pointed out, don't come here. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Jobs are the key. There's
sure.
no question about that.
Sure.
Many years ago, I was working for Westinghouse, and I had to find a new factory site. And I wanted it here. I surveyed the area very carefully, the whole county, and I was never told I couldn't have it here. It turned out that they wouldn't proceed, continue, unless I found another place. Now, I went to Pensacola, Florida. My story is this, that we do have an impediment here.
Just leave it alone. Leave it alone.
The newspaper strike and the bus strike during your tenure were terribly painful events in terms of the thing is, I'm implying. Why are we behind other cities, and well, perhaps all of Pennsylvania seems to be behind other states in solving this problem of perception?
Well, perception, of course, as I said before, is the best kept secret that we've ever had. And we have been working on that for years. Now, you've got to admit that the South has big advantages. No matter what we have to offer, we don't have the cheap labor. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania has been a strong labor city, and a lot of our big companies have a problem with labor, so that they don't want to deal with it. So that is something that's a problem, and how we can deal with it. We try to attract industry to the best we can. Mm-hmm. And we've been, as I said, the union switch and signal just
yes.
has begun. We hope to attract others. And we have attracted a lot of small companies who have come here and have settled. There's one on the north side during my administration. So that we are doing some things, not as much as we'd like, but Pittsburgh is doing much better.
Mm-hmm. You know, Murphy, Mayor Murphy, seems to think that $7 million he seems to have scratched up from somewhere, which I take it he calls enterprise money.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like you to speculate on that, you know.
I don't want to speculate on anything that Murphy's done because it's, you know, it sounds like I'm second-guessing him.
Yeah.
So I will not speculate on any of the things that he's done or is doing because obviously, it's just not the right thing to do.
Yeah, I agree with that. But
so I won't speculate on what he's going to do or what he has done.
Mm-hmm.
But
it doesn't go very far.
Well, of course not. And I can't believe that he is doing anything new, anything that we haven't tried to do in the last 6 or 8 years, the college year before me.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get companies to come here no matter what you offer them as Mrs. Weiss pointed out, you can't do anything about the tax structure in this Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Can't do anything about the aging population in Pittsburgh. I cut the wage tax of 0.5% in the hope,
yeah.
when I first
yeah.
went in the hope that a lot of young people would come here because they said the wage tax was excessive.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't work. We didn't get the results that we had hoped. But it was worth a try. There are a lot of things. I don't know what else could be done. As I pointed out, I hope that Mayor Murphy has better success than I did. I thought that we did a lot. I was there in council when the whole issue of the pirates came up.
Mm-hmm.
Mayor Caligiuri indebted the city to the amount of $20 million invested
mm-hmm.
in the pirates.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, the theory was and the belief was the city was not in the business of running a ball team, and we then agreed that it would be a 5-year plan. 12 people would put $2 million into it and run it, because the city was not in the business of running a ball team. And I was still in council at the time. And in 5 years, we were given 5 years in which to decide what will we do about it. trial by the seller. This level, we could do it by the way. 5 years came and went and nothing was done because the people who were running the pirates didn't want to give it up. But they wanted the city to contribute to it, and this is where we are today. If I were in that office today, I wouldn't give them a dime.
Mm-hmm.
I would not give take money from taxpayers to pay $2.5 million per year to pirates,
mm-hmm.
even if it meant losing the team. Because we've lost zero mills, we've lost everything, and we've survived, and I think we could survive without a team. I think economically, we wouldn't suffer a big loss, but I do believe that the image would be hurt. There's no question about that. But you have to produce some things, and I believe that would be one of them. I can't see pouring any more money into the pirates, because I think next year they'd come back and want $4 million more, or $8 million more, or whatever.
Well, it's a bottomless pit.
Sure. And there's no way that they're going to make money. There are very many